So these are my props. Let's say there's a disease X and a factor Y. And if you're exposed to Y, you have this much risk. And if you're not exposed to Y, you have that much risk. How much disease is attributable to factor Y? Well, none, because it's the same risk, whether you're exposed or not, so it's none attributable. If, however, you're exposed and you have twice the risk, relative risk of 2, half the people exposed, half the people unexposed, those that are exposed have twice the risk, how much of the disease is due to being exposed to factor Y? Well, it's a third of it, because here's a third. So you can do the, you can play that game with any number of exposure categories, and if we define the population into quintiles according to some vitamin intake or body fatness level, and we determine that the upper quintile of risk has twice the risk, then we can say that there's 1/6 of the risk is attributable to that risk factor. So that's what population attributable risk is. And that's what preventable fraction is, and that's what I was supposed to talk about, so I'm done. All I'm going to do, though, is give you a couple examples of how we estimate preventability in different populations, and for complex traits like cancer and diet. So these are equivalent terms, population attributable risk percent and preventable fraction. Let me give you three numbers, then you tell me which number is most useful intuitively and in terms of talking to policymakers and research colleagues. Three numbers: 180 per 100,000 per year, relative risk 1.9, and 20% of the disease is due to the factor. So the third number is much more useful. It's much more intuitively useful. So when we finished this World Cancer Research Fund report, we said, and we determined that the report was full of numbers, we said, let's make sure it's useful. And so we converted the report into preventable fraction. So in order to determine what the preventable fraction is for cups or for nutrition and cancer, all you need are these things. You need the relative risk, that is, how much is the risk increased if you're exposed to some factor like deficient in fruits and vegetables or overweight or obese. How common is that factor? How many cups are there? And then after those are the only two elements you need, and trust me, there's a nice formula. It's really, really simple, really easy, simple algebraic formula that is combines relative risk with prevalence to come up with preventable fraction. But we have to consider confounding. That is some association between a factor and a disease really due to causal relationship, or is it only due to the fact that that factor is related to other factors, such as other social determinants, other behavioral factors. And so for some nutritional factors like diet and physical activity, for instance, that we know are closely linked, it's important to try to separate those out as best we can. And then finally, if we have a number of factors that contribute to disease, sometimes we got to be careful as we sum them up. We can't just simply add them up, because if you prevented disease from factor one, some disease from factor one, and you want to determine how much disease you can prevent from factor two, well, if that disease is already prevented, then you only apply these computations to what's left. And so if you keep subtracting out that way, then you don't over sum. And so this is just the cup example for half the people with low exposure and half high exposure. That's the only attributable risk or excess risk that's attributable to the factor. And we can do the same thing for multiple exposures as well. This is just the histogram version of the cups that I just showed you. So the challenges in nutrition for the World Cancer Research Fund were that nutrition's complex. There's a lot of different ways to define it and to look at it. We needed to really, as accurately as we could, assess the associations and then account for confounding in order to make some reasonable inference about how much of those associations were really causally related to the factors. And most importantly, because it was a world report, we needed to try to account as best we could for variations in different populations in different countries in different parts of the world as to what the associations were and what the prevalences were. So we took a look at studies everywhere and did comparing and contrasting of the population preventable fraction around the world. So this was the process, and then this continuous updating resulted in this policy report, the summary of which I'm pleased to see you have here today. And it was really in this policy report then where we took the estimates of relative risks and prevalences of nutritional factors from around the world and computed preventable fractions from them. So there was a number of recommendations made from this review. I'm just going to talk about four of them: the obesity-related recommendation, the one on physical activity, eating more plants relating to fruits and vegetables, and the alcohol one. There's some of these others are interesting, but probably less important than these four, and some of these are more relevant for developing countries than here in the U.S. The conclusions for obesity were really, I think there was a unanimous view of the panel that obesity, both here in the U.S. and in, globally and increasingly in developing countries, is one of the major preventable causes of cancer now and into the future, with convincing evidence for a number of cancer sites and probable evidence for others. And I think since this report, I think we would probably add more to the convincing category for some other cancer sites as well. The preventable fraction for obesity and cancers, pretty substantial for several different cancers. For postmenopausal breast cancer, nearly 20%, that we think is isolated as caused by the excess hyperestrogenemia that accompanies obesity after the menopause. And that same hyperestrogenemia causes about half of all endometrial cancer, which, as you know, is largely a postmenopausal disease driven by estrogens. Interestingly, esophageal cancer, although a third of it might be caused by obesity, almost none of it in the upper part of the esophagus is caused by obesity. It's only lower esophageal adenocarcinoma that we think is due to gastroesophageal reflux. So here's an example of where obesity is a mechanical factor for causing cancer, whereas for breast, it's more of a, and endometrial, more of a hormonal factor. So looking around the world, let me go back. So this is for the U.S., and so if we sum up across all cancer sites, about 20% of cancer we think is caused by excess body fat. One of the big surprises to me was that obesity and many of these other risk factors really didn't vary that much across different countries. Now, the reason Brazil and China have lower preventable fractions related to obesity is largely because of their current lower obesity levels. But what we know is that that's changing fast. We're going to hear maybe about Brazil, maybe a comment about it shortly. It's certainly changing fast in China, where epidemics of obesity and diabetes are really quite steeply up. So I think that these proportions are going to increase in the future. And one of the things we've found is that both cardiovascular disease and probably also cancer are related more strongly to obesity, even at lower levels in China than here in the U.S., and hence there are Asian-specific cut points for overweight and obesity appropriately that are cut lower than here in the U.S. Our conclusions for alcohol were convincing for a number of sites, and it's been well known for a long time, of course, that oral and esophageal cancer are related to alcohol intake, but probably more cancer is caused by alcohol in breast cancer than for the others because breast cancer is so much more common. And these proportions of a risk or so-called preventable fractions from alcohol, again, are quite large, especially for the upper aerodigestive cancers and breast cancer. For physical activity, there was a much more limited list of sites for which we thought there was convincing evidence. And let me say that we found convincing the relationships between physical activity and many other cancer sites, but judge that those may be due to, in large part, to the relationship between physical activity and maintaining lost body weight. There's a lot of ways to lose weight, only one way to keep it off, and that's to be regularly physically active. But for endometrial cancer, we thought there was an independent relationship. This picture here is our physical activity in the United States, for those of you who are here from elsewhere. That's how we walk our dogs. But we thought, in addition to adiposity, physical activity also had an independent effect on breast and colorectal cancer. I'm going to not spend long on fruits and vegetables because I want to end and make sure we have time for discussion. But sizable relationships, especially for upper aerodigestive cancers with various definitions of types of fruit and vegetable intake. So that's that was our exercise. Those were our conclusions. And I think my comments are mostly intended to frame the next discussions, which are leading more towards policy change and health equity activities related to what's a diverse set of factors in nutrition and physical activity and cancer risk. Thank you.